CliffCentral.com.
Got a mind of its own, this machine. Good morning, everybody.
Yes, a special good morning to you and to you and especially to you. We're broadcasting live from our premises in Rivonia, Johannesburg, where Sia arrived this morning and found out that there is actually a ghost, which was once discussed by Michael Flex when he was in the same position.
Are you serious?
Oh my goodness.
Uh-oh.
I didn't want to believe it at first, but now I do.
Was he hissing at you? The ghost hiss, apparently.
Do they hiss?
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like the ghost wants me to know it's there, but it doesn't want any interaction. So,
it's funny how it's chosen the most dramatic person on the member of staff.
Well, I'm here first, so as I walk in, it's...
You only ever hear ghosts when you're on your own, Ben. If there were more than one person, it's not a ghost.
Or we could just have a hobo in the roof.
But oh, right, my God. Hobo in the roof.
I am that not... sounds like a musical. Hobo in the roof.
Fiddler on the roof. No, yeah. I'm
if
not...
I were a homeless man. Da-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dum.
Hey, I'm not still dismissing the fact that it could be a ghost. Like, I've sort of dismissed the sound on certain mornings.
Okay, so what kind of sounds? What are you hearing?
It's like someone banging a door from the roof, and they're running off. Like, I've startled them by walking in. But now, this morning particularly, as I was opening one of these security doors first, I felt like there was like this... presence,
let's call it that,
hovering from the top of the stairs. Now, I didn't even want to turn around and look at what it was. So all I just made sure to do was to cover the keypad as I punched in the security code and just shut the door behind me instantly.
Yeah, good. But weren't there some guys who went onto the roof the other day who might have been like the local burglars?
Well, it wasn't on the roof.
But, like, some guys came in the other day and they went straight up into the roof.
This is making me itch and hot all at the same time. I don't want to know. I don't want to think about this. I just don't. Whatever it is, if it is a hobo, if it is Casper, the unfriendly ghost, just coexist. Jeez. I don't want to know you. Don't talk to me. Just...
sounds like heavy going, Sia.
Leave me alone. No.
Hard to be you. I'm going to send Amanda in here earlier with you, and then she can make sure that you're safe.
Look, it can be Amanda's task to go and find the ghost.
Oh, she's not scared. She'll kick that ghost ass.
No, Gareth, no. I believe in that shit. I'm petrified.
Are you?
It's actually very bad how scared I am of ghosts.
Uh-oh. I thought we could rely on you here.
No, but, like, I don't think... it's not here to harm you. It's just checking things out. And what's the covering the keypad going to help? It, like, goes under the door, through the windows, everything.
Well, I was just thinking, if it was a hobo who's looking at me...
Yeah.
You know, I don't want him to follow me inside.
A hobo?
Just all like...
right. We lock the door outside.
But this is highly plausible, though,
no,
Gareth.
But Lucas told me that someone lives... on above us.
Yeah, Jesus. I mean, we went through that a long time ago.
Hang on a second. Where? In that room upstairs?
Yes.
I don't know. Like,
that room is now being used as an office.
But the entire rooftop situation.
Yeah, but no one's going to sleep on the roof. Do you know how freezing cold it is up there?
Says whom?
No, come on,
Sia. Do you know how many people go up and down these stairs and we think, okay, oh, it's just maintenance?
And there's no shelter up there. There's none. It's cold, it's shitty. If there were a homeless person, if a homeless person broke into this building every night, which first of all they'd have to break in, the place they would choose to sleep is on the sofa outside here.
Yeah, they wouldn't go up where it's cold.
Nah, they take drugs, I don't think they get cold, no.
Where do they get the money to take drugs every night, Amanda?
Yeah, that's a lot of drugs. I know rich people who can't afford that much of whatever it is. I mean, really. Okay, guys, let's be adult about this now. Mm-hmm. There is no ghost. There's no such thing as ghosts. There's no homeless person living on the roof. Those noises are the noises of wind and steel expanding and contracting, and yes, yeah.
You see, so
there are huge satellite dishes on this roof. Do you not think they move around?
See, I get the sound of something contracting and expanding. That's like a bit of a crackle.
Okay, so what kind of sound are you hearing?
This is literally is a swoosh of a large object banging, which could only be...
Maybe it's a door.
Are you laughing at...
No, Sia.
Girl, we are meant to be together in this struggle.
I am, but listen, like, I don't want to sound like a psycho. She's
feeling all left up.
No, I don't want to sound like a psycho, but like, most of the time, when I think there's something, I can feel it. And I haven't felt anything here.
Well, okay, child in Sixth Sense and you see dead people. I also feel and see these
vibes. Well, Sia said he felt a presence. Now, listen, your head can convince you this. I've sometimes watched a scary movie, and I'll go out at, I don't know, 10 o'clock at night to get something from the car or whatever, and I will be convinced there's some monster demon thing lurking somewhere in the area where my car's parked to come and get me. But you suddenly go, what the, I mean, come on. Get out. Don't be stupid. And then you shake your head and you walk back inside and you go to sleep or whatever.
That's fine. That's fine on the first time. Like the fourth time, yeah, maybe not. But please at least promise me this. If there is a ghost and I'm taken and you don't even find my body, please at least promise that you'll use CCTV footage
to make sure that you weren't...
Like, make a Paranormal Activity 12 movie.
I'll tell you
so
what.
That my life is not in vain.
We will go through some footage over the last couple of weeks, and I'll tell them that they've got to check if there's anything going on here.
I think I want to get, like, one of those ghost reader people
in
there.
Yeah, that would be so cool.
Bring them in. That'll be fine. Get them to walk around with their two-pronged stick or whatever and figure out if there's a ghost.
Dory's got friends like that.
But not like a beyond ears and eyes thing. We need like actual Ghostbuster
with the sticks.
Machinery thing.
Yeah. What do you mean? What do you mean like not a beyond ears and eyes thing? What are you talking about?
You know, I love me some sage and a candle or two, but this is a job for some
the serious Ghostbusters.
Oh, absolutely.
A machine that's so serious.
A machine.
Yeah, no candle's gonna help this.
All right. Listen, Ben sent me a really interesting article about how there are some things that you should not do on a plane. We got to look at this later on because people are so badly behaved on a plane. I do have to say, traveling back from Germany, I sat with a German girl on my left and a South African dude on the right. Neither of them got up in 10 hours, so they weren't those people who are always going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Neither of them... made a noise. Neither of them leaned over. I was in the middle seat, which I hate usually. I mean, it's so awful. Yeah, there's nothing.
How did that happen?
It was overbooked. The flight was overbooked. They even asked people. They said, I want to know if you'd take this deal. Before we took off, they said to the people queuing up to board, if you would accept our offer and go tomorrow night instead, because this flight's overbooked, we will give you 600 euros. We'll put you up in a hotel. And we'll make sure that you're on tomorrow night's flight.
So, yeah, like,
and you'll get first choice of a seat. You'd take it?
Like a Dr. David Dow situation before he was manhandled.
They don't pull you off the aircraft, thank goodness.
Choice of a seat, like, I could never sit in the middle.
You said 600 euros.
Yeah, so we're talking around 8,600 rand. And
that's great. So basically, you go home a day late, but then when you get home here, you go for a nice weekend.
Yeah, or you take that money and you get another ticket because that's about the price of a return ticket to Germany. So, would you take it?
And you get a better seat, most likely.
And you get a hotel room for the night where you can just chill.
Oh, down.
And you do it?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, look, if you've got something to get to, like a wedding or. Something, obviously, you don't take it.
Yeah.
Would you do it, Amanda?
No, I wouldn't take it.
You want to get home, right? You planned. For me, it was a 10-day trip, and I was ready to come home.
Your flight was on Saturday.
Saturday night, so we arrived Sunday morning.
Oh, okay. No, then you wouldn't have been able to take it. Because most likely you would have flown
Sunday night. Yeah, I would have missed Monday's show yesterday. As it was, I kind of missed the first half hour anyway.
Hey, so you could have.
Anyway, these people on either side of me were a dream to fly with, and I was very nervous about being in the middle seat. And it was just great. I went to sleep. I managed to sleep on the plane, which is difficult to do for me. Some people are very good at that. But, you know, there are people who behave less well on planes, and I thought it might be an interesting discussion because there are rules that nobody really puts in a – they don't put these in a pamphlet. They don't put them in the seat pocket in front of you. A lot of people are raised by wolves, and their parents don't teach them basic
stuff.
Not
the good ones, of course.
No, I mean, like a lot of people's parents just teach them nothing because the parents are used to absolutely nothing, and they don't have any responsibilities when it comes to telling the child how to behave or what's acceptable and what's not. So people behave very badly.
Mm. But when you think about it, Gareth, like there's rules to how you cross a road, right? There's rules to as how you operate heavy machinery.
Yeah.
There should be rules to flying because when people who are mostly horrible are confined to a small area for a decent amount of time, that is a serious thing in life. That's not us just passing each other in a mall where there's no rules.
It's very serious. And nobody writes these down and teaches. You know, it's like being able to, like having decent table manners. There's no rule book. No one goes around to schools and says to all the kids at schools, whether their parents are rich and sophisticated or poor and sophisticated or the opposite. They don't tell them. And then you have, you know, like some guy who's at a dinner with the CEO and a bunch of other people because it's a work function, and he's eating really badly and he's vomiting and burping and carrying on and farting in public and just behaving like a menace. And he wonders why he then doesn't hold on to that job for another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it's not his fault. Nobody's told him. But somebody somewhere has to tell everybody how to behave, right?
Totally
and on,
agree.
On a plane, I will never forget one of the most awful experiences I've ever had is sitting next to a woman on a plane in America for 6 hours from New York to Los Angeles. This woman brought out a tin of sardines. And she smeared the sardines all over some toast.
Worse.
And she made it. It stank, and she was revolting. She turned the whole plane into a nightmare. And nobody sat her down and said, listen, you reprobate. You don't do this on a flight with a lot of other people. Like, think of other people for a change.
You see, there are certain things, even when we talk about table manners.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about being, you know, the queen's etiquette and being so presumptuous. Like, I think...
just being able to hold the knife and fork in the right hand.
For me, like, the whole elbow on the table thing.
Yeah.
I kind of look over because
if
I'm eating and I'm you know, in the middle of a conversation.
You're not
well.
Sitting eating with Louis the 14th at Versailles.
Exactly. Right. But I wouldn't necessarily put my feet on the table and I'll burp all over the place. So same thing with...
And believe me, I get it wrong a lot of the time before you start thinking, oh, you know, he thinks he's important. I have often been reprimanded because I'll put my feet up on the desk or because... I do this all the time. Or because I'll...
But you don't do that in the middle of a meeting. You do that if you're like there...
No,
with,
I'll do it if I'm...
with one
person if I'm just chilling.
Yeah.
But still, it's not acceptable.
Well, there are some people who like get up in arms. That's how dare you use a salad fork?
Yeah.
You know,
and I mean, Skolopat comes in here and Skolopat just falls asleep on our sofa. You know, maybe Skolopat's living here. That's the homeless person we're looking for. Why would she want to go back to Bethlehem when she could get free accommodation in Johannesburg, right? Maybe it's her.
Hey, she's getting Wi-Fi. She probably might free sneak Wi-Fi. Down here and make some tea.
This is the best hotel in the whole world. You get free Wi-Fi, you get tea, endless supplies of water,
if you're
electricity.
On the roof, not too shabby, you know, views. In
you get a good view.
Sunrise.
Actually, come to think of it, we should rent this place out.
Cliff Central Commune. Yeah. We always said this from
damn
the
right.
beginning.
So we'll look at all of that stuff a little bit later on. Mubs is not here, by the way, if you're wondering why she's so quiet. It's not because she's sitting there looking at the rest of us, judging us. She had to wake up early for something this morning. She's got other work that she has to do. So she said she won't be able to come in today.
You know what that means?
What does that mean?
What does it mean?
It means Gareth's grumpy.
Why?
Well, new survey suggests that when Mbali Maloy is not here in studio, you are 23% less happy.
Really?
Yeah.
Where's the
I think I'm
from?
Okay today. No, usually that's right.
I don't make it up, sir. This is just what the survey has been saying.
Usually that's right. Mubs is, you know, she's important to me. When she's not here, it does irritate me a little bit because then I don't have my, you know, my number one. But
Oh. Wow, you just hit CS feelings, Gareth. Well done.
Yeah, oh, CS thought up, he was number one.
Wait a minute. If we're not doing rankings.
I'm okay today, though. I'm fine. I'm in a very good mood. So, very important. Harry Potter. Can you believe Harry Potter's the Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone is 20 years old?
That's outrageous.
Isn't it outrageous?
I saw the tweet from J.K. Rowling.
How old is Daniel Radcliffe?
Yeah.
Somebody look that up for me.
32.
What?
I'm guessing.
I saw this yesterday. So, by the way, Daniel Radcliffe is 27. But I was...
Wow.
That means the first Harry Potter came out in 1997. That was the actual book.
Really?
When the movie came out.
Yeah, when did the movie come out?
And I think 2001, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. So, basically, J.K. Rowling's been rich for 20 years. Yesterday was more about her 20th anniversary of being rich.
Well, good for her. I mean, what a dream.
You know, she was like...
She was down and out.
On the dole.
Yeah, she wrote those books in a coffee shop where she had to charge her laptop, which was old and verstunken. She was like losing manuscripts every other day. And she would sit there for the bottomless coffee.
And they'd go, oh, there's that woman again.
And they'd go, there's that goddamn woman who's
drinking yesterday's coffee.
Man. But I think she's actually had... one of the most level-headed evolutions in terms of, you know, getting fame and money. She hasn't really lost her head much.
Well, yeah, but
well,
then
she
but then
trolls
she,
Donald Trump.
She
and that's
does,
the title.
Yeah, she's all over politics
if,
now.
If
and,
you were this person who had no money at all, just writing this fantasy you have in your head, you now have all these opportunities. Wouldn't you also go like, oh, this little cheese curl is annoying me. Let me actually say something, you know.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But she's, listen, I like that J.K. Rowling exists and I like her story.
Mm. Same thing with, you know, she wrote the first Harry Potter book, as you were mentioning, like in coffee shops and on the bus and. And for the last one, she actually said, screw it. And she booked out this whole hotel in Scotland and she went there to write. I'm like, yes, because you can.
She has sold more than 400 million copies of her books. I mean, that's how you become a millionaire.
Let's just say she gets a pound a book.
Billionaire. Now.
If it's a pound a book, it's 400 million pounds.
Wow.
I wonder what she is worth. Let me just look that up. Net worth, J.K. Rowling. Let me see what we've got here. Net worth, 2017. All right. Dun, da, da, da. Here it is. Oh, she is a billionaire.
Yeah.
She is a billionaire.
Man.
That's amazing. So you see, it can be done. Because a lot of people say, oh, well, publishing, it's such a nightmare. And, you know, publishing's like radio or television or newspapers or magazines. You're never going to end up a billionaire. Can you imagine how much money her publishers made? Because they take the lion's share of that money. J.K. Rowling is one of the most consistent moneymakers, if not the best ever. She's notoriously private when it comes to her vast fortune, which means her net worth is a close-kept secret and the subject of rampant speculation. Given the success of her new film, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, there's a new estimate of her worth, courtesy of the New York Times writer James B. Stewart, which pegs it at $1.2 billion.
Mm.
Good Lord. That is something else.
It is a phenomenon, though.
Whew.
Harry Potter and the story is a phenomenon.
Even her non-Harry Potter books earned her another $50 million. I mean, that's what most people would want for their number one bestseller, and they'd be happy they'd quit.
That's a great career.
$50 million. The first of the films grossed $3.5 billion with a profit of $2.5 billion. A 10% net profit participation cut for Rowling would have meant she took $250 million from those movies alone.
That is the first
And the merchandising?
Movie?
She could have earned another $400 million from the next four Harry Potter films, which generated more than $4 billion combined. If Fantastic Beasts ends up grossing $500 million or more, a lowball estimate at this point, she could see another payday of $50 million, bringing her vast film fortune alone to $700 million. Okay, so she hasn't made all of that out of books. She's made most of it out of movies.
Mm.
She earned a one-time licensing fee of between $60 and $80 million for the Wizarding World theme park attractions.
You are getting money from, granted, it is your idea, but you don't have to sketch a game. You don't have to maintain one of the, you know, gates or anything. Put a block of cement in for the paving, and you just get
60 mil.
In
total, they estimate Rowling's earnings from books, movies, theme parks, and television at $2.2 billion. If she paid Britain's top tax rate for individuals of 45%, she'd still end up with $1.2 billion. And that figure doesn't count the licensing fees she's earned from the Harry Potter play, licensing fees from the merchandise, investment income, and capital gains.
Wow.
When asked for an estimate, a representative for Rowling declined to comment.
So, Sia, start writing Hobo in the Roof.
Wow.
It could be. Do you know, I'm thinking about what if she had self-published?
Well, then it's the distribution problem, right? It could have been a great book and never got anywhere.
Yeah.
That's what publishers do. That's what they get books out.
She is a big charitable donator or donor. She is also a publishing icon. She pays taxes. She gives generously. He argues Rowling is a rarity among today's business moguls and celebrities and a role model to many. Well, whatever. You don't have to necessarily look up to her or think she's fantastic, but I do like her story. It's amazing that like one fantasy, one fictional story in her head has made her a billionaire.
Mm.
It means that it's possible. Before anyone gets upset, you wake up this morning and you're like, oh, my life is a disaster. I exist from moment to moment. Just relax. Some people, and by the way, this doesn't mean that everybody who's going to come up with some idea is going to suddenly make billions.
Yeah.
I think there are three fiction geniuses. And the one never even got to experience real fame and money.
Okay.
One would be Tolkien, who wrote Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. And then it's J.K. Rowling, and then it's Twilight.
I don't think Twilight's ever made a billion, but I do think Star Wars for George Lucas was there.
But then you go further and think that this whole thing of great ideas, books equals movies, 50 Shades of Shite, I mean, that is a money spinner of note.
Oh, for sure. But 50 Shades I don't know that it would have made a billion. You know, that's why I'm saying that let's use that as the benchmark.
Yeah, exactly. To be a real success in the fantasy world.
If we use that as a benchmark, because, I mean, George Lucas, they say, is worth $5.1 billion US dollars. that's it. Isn't that incredible? Huh?
That's not even an amount. That's just...
It's $5.1 billion US dollars. You could spend millions every day. And you'd still never run out of money.
Mm. I mean, he could actually literally own Johnny Depp.
He could.
That's how rich he is. Yeah.
By the way,
we were talking about that last week.
Pay Johnny off Johnny Depp's. Johnny Depp's.
What's going on with Johnny Depp at the moment? Is he, because he apparently made some joke about trying to kill Trump or something, and people hate him now. And
well,
I mean, what happened there?
The guy is a bit of a lost cause, but we're talking about the fact that he can't keep up his finances anymore.
What?
But at the same time, Pirates of the Caribbean 17 is coming out, so he'll get like $30 or $40 million from that, which will keep him going for a couple of months.
Well, apparently what he did, he said in a thinly veiled allusion to killing President Donald Trump, he asked the Glastonbury crowd, when was the last time an actor assassinated a president? And the comments interpreted as a nod to the assassination of Abraham Lincoln by John Wilkes Booth, an actor, more than 150 years ago, sparked widespread condemnation. People were very unhappy about it. So a lot of people were talking about Johnny Depp in the news, just in case you thought that he disappeared completely.
Like, what in the Kathy Griffin are you doing, Johnny Depp?
What for, dude? It,
like,
why?
It's
unnecessary, right?
Actor Johnny Depp knew what he was about to say to a crowd in the UK would get a rise out of people.
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president? I want to clarify, I'm not an actor. I lie for a living.
For the record, the answer to his question is April 1865, when actor John Wilkes Booth killed President Abraham Lincoln. Critics have condemned Depp for what he said, but he's far from the only celebrity to engage in these kinds of comments. Yes, Hollywood has long tended to lean left, but this kind of extremist talk is new. In January, Madonna said this at the Women's March in Washington.
Yes, I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
No.
But I know that this won't change anything.
In Snoop Dogg's video for Lavender, he shoots a clown version of the president with a toy gun. and graphic images of Kathy Griffin holding a mock bloodied head of President Trump made her a target of a Secret Service investigation, according to her lawyers. It also cost her a job. CNN called the photos disgusting and offensive and fired her as its New Year's Eve co-host. At issue is free speech versus security. Threatening the life of a U.S. president is a federal crime that can result in a fine or up to 5 years in prison or both. A lot of Hollywood stars are traditionally very public about their liberal politics, but these incidents cross a line.
Really, there hasn't been anybody saying, you know, enough is enough. And I think that needs to come from Hollywood, from the left wing, from somebody who can say, hey, you know what, I voted for Hillary Clinton, but let's not incite violence against the president of the United States. I might not support him, but, you know, there is a fine line that we, you know, that we can't cross over.
As for Depp, the White House released this statement, quote, President Trump has condemned violence in all forms, and it's sad that others like Johnny Depp have not followed his lead. I hope that some of Mr. Depp's colleagues will speak out against this type of rhetoric as strongly as they would if his comments were directed to a Democrat elected official.
Now, Jim, there is an update to the story. John.
All right, well, we'll leave it there, but you get the basic idea. So that's why he's in trouble, if you were wondering. He's in the news again.
Exactly.
Just so stupid.
Yeah, you don't need to do this, dude. I mean, listen, again, we got into this whole discussion around Kathy Griffin and freedom of speech. And of course, you got freedom of expression, but if you threaten the life of a sitting president, you're looking for trouble. And how is that any different to a terrorist overseas who's doing the same thing?
Exactly.
Yeah, spot on.
You're asking for trouble. Of course you can do it. You live in a free society. None of these people, by the way, have been arrested. None of them. So it shows you how tolerant and open and democratic and free that society is. Try to say that about Putin in Russia and see how long you last on the streets. They will have you clapped in irons and locked in some gulag long before you know what the hell's going on. I promise you.
And it's just not constructive.
Yeah. It's not. It's just, it's a dumb idea. Anyway, let's move on. We've got things to do, people to see, places to go. It's 6:30, and the news is brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria. Yesterday was a Monday, which means you get the special 2-for-1 deal. And a lot of people, obviously, taking advantage of that. I even got a message on my phone from Colcacchio saying, if you come and get a pizza today, you get the cheaper one of the two pizzas for free.
Yeah, my app is going so well. I've now crossed over the 700 slices on Maestro Little.
Very nice.
Yeah, man. Back here this weekend.
Must make you one of the best.
Well, if there is a prize.
There should be a ranking system. Yeah. They should actually publish the best clients list. I'm going to ask them to do that. And if you aren't in the top 10, I'll be surprised. All right, let's get stuck into the news, shall we, and find out what's going on. No Mabale this morning. She is not here today, so we're going to handle the news between us. Mm-hmm. And if you've got something to say, if you've got something on your mind, all you need to do is call us on 0861-555-189. That's 0861-555-189. Give us a call. Tell us what you're up to. Tell us what's going on. Here it is, the news.
Right, so there's no such thing as white monopoly capital.
No, there isn't, and that's according to Paul Mashatile, right?
Yeah, so the ANC Gauteng, who appeared to be more progressive, of course, these are the guys who weren't so keen on Jacob Zuma, or aren't so keen on Jacob Zuma. In the last elections, they made this perfectly clear. Didn't have a great elections, but they seemed to be having some pretty insightful conversations amongst each other. So they had their own little conference recently.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things. Mashatile said that they have to worry about using some concepts and terminology because it smacks of populism, which will then bring confusion within our ranks. Of course, this is in the wake of all the Gupta leaks and how Bell Pottinger has been doing what they've been doing. And Bell Pottinger, of course, were popularizing the phrase white monopoly capital to create all this sort of hocus-pocusry that's been going around and causing conflict.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, it's a relief to me that someone in the ANC is saying sensible things. First of all, there are a lot of people in this country who want to believe that white monopoly capital is the reason for their misery.
Sure, it's easy.
You know, you want to blame someone else. It's like hating on the CEOs. You hear what a CEO is earning compared to what you're earning and you hate them. But that's just jealousy. The reason you're not the CEO is because you're not as smart as the CEO. If you were, you'd be the CEO. Yeah. That's why you don't get paid what the CEO gets paid. In this case, it's not even like that. There is no such thing as white monopoly capital. There is a lot of monopoly in this country, and the monopolies that we find are monopolies that are controlled by government. They are state-owned enterprises like Telkom and like SAA.
And what about the taxi business?
The taxi
business. Those bunch of dicks.
And let me tell you something else. And by the way, none of these aforementioned are owned by whites or white monopolies. And where there are collusions, like with the bread cartel and the cell phone cartel, we know who they are. And they're not monopolies, but they get together and they collude against us. And we've got to stand up to them. And the Competition Commission has done so far a pretty good job of bringing these people to heel. Mostly. So let's just dispel this thing immediately, because it is a bullshit thing, and people are starting to believe nonsense because they're afraid and because the economy's tightening up and there's less money flying around, and all of us are nervous, right? We're nervous about growth. We're nervous about this downgrade. We're nervous about our debt, interest rates. Obviously, when we get nervous like this, what do? We try to find someone to blame for our situation.
Exactly.
Well, you've got to blame the one person who is completely responsible for this. He appointed a finance minister, then fired them, then appointed another finance minister, then fired them. And we know why he's doing all of this, because he wants his friends to have keys to the treasury. You want to know why the economy's in shit? It's not white monopoly capital. It's the president.
Yep. Gauteng ANC deputy chairperson David Makura said the same thing. It's nothing more than a distraction. So the notion of white capital is nothing more than distraction to attempt to frame the leadership contest around something that is a distraction. So they're making it pretty clear, which is good. Speaking out against these kind of things is what will actually make change, I guess. The prison strippers, that story just is going from strength to strength.
We didn't really cover this yesterday, did we?
Well, it was kind of there. People were thinking maybe it's fake news, but it has been confirmed as authentic.
Yeah.
And there were strippers in the prison. Mm-hmm. And obviously people, you know, it's gone viral on Facebook, so there's been many, many comments. Well, the general consensus is that, is this what our taxpaying money does? So that the people can go to prison and strippers will come and visit them during family days. Because it was during a family day this was taking place.
What's understood by this is that the strippers were entertaining convicts as part of Youth Day celebrations.
Youth Day.
And 13 officials, though, from the Johannesburg Correctional Center have now been served with letters of intent to suspend them after these half-naked women were allowed inside the prison. In one of the images, two women can be seen pulling at the trousers of a shirtless inmate, while another image shows a scantily clad woman embracing a grinning man who also is in the orange prison-issue clothes. And warders in full uniform and more than a dozen inmates can also be seen watching from the prison yard. So the Acting National Commissioner, James Smallberger, says this was a clear breach of security. He says that was provided to give guidance as well as other policies and procedures. But he also goes on to also add that those responsible have been identified, and that while several items were on the Youth Day program to entertain inmates, strippers were not on that list.
Well, I should hope not. Prison is not a holiday camp.
Mm.
Prison's meant to be horrible. Whole point with prison is that it's meant to be unpleasant, right?
Yeah, you should not want to go there.
I think they're focusing on the whole rehabilitation thing. That's just gone way too far. There's no excuse or justification for this at all, actually. But also, in sort of trying to defuse the situation, the National Commissioner also adds on to say that no, there was no taxpayers' money involved in the event.
Yeah, I am... I'm it's funny, right? It is funny. You got a bunch of, and by the way, these are terrible strippers.
It's odd.
I don't know where they found them.
Rural areas, Gareth. They're so judgy.
Awful. Very low quality. Very bad. Very, very loserish strippers.
Of course, the Minister of Police, Fikile Mbalula, went on to say on Twitter that he is the Minister of Police, not the Minister of Correctional Services. You just wanted to clear that up.
Yeah, because when strippers are involved, they think it's him.
Hey.
Yeah, so that, just want to clear that up. That's actually, that's how we should have started the story, actually.
All right.
So bizarre.
Convicted child rapist Davie de Villiers will be sentenced today.
Yes.
This horrible piece of shit is found guilty of 32 of 38 charges, including raping a child, sexual assault, fraud, exposing children to pornography, and accessing child pornography. So he had a model agency. He's one of those creepy, I'm a photographer kind of guys. And he would lure young girls to kind of do what he referred to as method acting, whereby they would strip in front of him. Huh. And he thought this little part of the industry, to which the judge was like, no, your story's crap, you're a sicko. And he shall learn his fate today.
Well, prison for him too, but no strippers.
Ben, yeah, well, no, he can be the stripper in prison for a lot of big, burly men.
Oh, that's a good point.
Can I actually put a request for you to do news at least once a week?
Yeah.
This horrible piece of shit, he says.
Yeah, this is the way we pass news on to each other, right?
I'm not entirely sure how else you refer to someone who's a convicted child rapist.
I mean, love that.
Mabali's a professional. She would never say stuff like that, which is why Ben is perfect for this standard.
See.
For the first thing is, this man does not deserve genitalia. I mean, it can go on and on. There should be certain crimes, certain punishments for certain crimes.
Yeah.
Ugh. This de Villiers dude also claims that the state witnesses had lied and conspired with Mnet's carte blanche to harm his reputation and that of his model agency.
Model agency?
Yeah.
What are you doing with children? Come on.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something. I've said this before. If you are in a beauty pageant and you're under the age of 16, your parents should be locked up and you should be locked up with them.
You're essentially sexualizing a child.
It's just wrong. It just feels wrong in every way. It's just totally unnecessary. There is no reason for children to dress up and win beauty pageants under the age of 16. None.
We've said it before. Toddlers and tiaras and ISIS.
It's wrong.
The same thing. Those mothers, they're just the bigger threat to humanity.
It's bad. It's bad. It's bad. It's bad.
And look, I'm not one to really judge people based on looks, but this de Villiers dude does look like a prick.
No, he's a creep.
No, he does. I mean, if there was something he was doing in life, it's interfering with children. That's the look he has.
You don't. There was only a few things in the world that all of us just have a natural indignation towards. That we have a gut feel that's like, ooh, that's not right. You know, if someone said that they murdered Hitler, we might be able to say, well, sometimes murder isn't such a bad thing, right? Yeah. Someone stole something that, let's say you stole from someone who'd stolen, then stealing is okay.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can bend rules. The one thing you can never bend the rules with is this. There's never a pedophile who gets arrested and charged and then is found guilty and people go, well, yeah, that kid was kind of hot.
Mm.
Nobody says that because it's just gross.
That literally sent a shiver down my spine.
Yeah, of course.
It's creepy, yeah.
And nobody says, well, he's just a little freaky.
Mm.
It's just wrong.
It's like, well, he
Amanda thinks that's funny.
What?
He's a little freaky, you know. Or, you know, he battles with his peer group, so he's with the kids. You know what I'm saying?
He never had his own childhood. So he's just hanging with the kids. Some 50-year-old guy.
No.
Wrong.
So gross.
Okay, well, other news that could be wrong could be right, depending on who you are.
I mean, at least wait for them to be 18 or 20. At least, if you really like younger people, wait until they're 18 or 20. What the hell? It's not going to kill you, right? If you're a 30, 40, 50-year-old man and you just can't help yourself and no one your age is for you, you got to... The law, man.
Mm.
Come on.
Well, speaking of the law in Zimbabwe, there looks to be a different wave of farm reclaim, land reclaim, whatever they call it.
Okay, the last death throes of this government
as
the president starts going into his death throes.
So Bob, as he has very little to do other than trying to stay awake at official gatherings, he now says that the people who claimed land from the whites who aren't using the land properly will now also have to lose their farms.
Oh, man.
So it's like land reclaim squared now. So there are still whites who actually own commercial farms in Zimbabwe, and now they are being sort of victims of a new wave of land reclaim and some violent ones taking place.
So now he's actually taking away from people.
But he's also assessing the people who did reclaim the land around 2000 when this all started.
Yeah.
Saying that there's something like over 200,000 applications for farms. So what he's saying is that if you haven't used the farm properly, then you will be losing it. And people have been served with letters saying as much.
Is this a bad thing, though?
Yes, of course it is. You can't. The state is not allowed to dispossess people of land.
500,000 applications awaiting resettlement.
You can't just take away people's land. You can't. The state should not be able to take away what is yours, even if they were the ones who originally gave it to you. You can't do that.
Based on the fact that you're being unproductive.
No, and that's why I say, you know, it's in certain situations we say, well, stealing from someone who's stolen. These people didn't steal. They were given the land by the government. It's not like, look, some of them went and occupied it illegally, and those ones you have to look at each case on its own merits.
Mm.
I don't think that the government should be involved in distributing personal property around.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way I feel about it. It doesn't mean it's true for everybody. And there are probably people who quite like the idea of the state being in charge of this. People like Julius Malema. If he were the president, he would want nationalization of land and of mines and of all of that stuff because he thinks it'll work. But it removes the incentive for people to do well.
But also this is stupidity of all this, right? So Bob wanted to kind of rebalance the whole colonial thing, saying Zimbabweans must have Zimbabwe. And there was also about like increasing agriculture production, but there's no agriculture production right now because people are taking farms, but they don't know how to farm. So it's just the stupidest thing in the world. So now you've got these fallow farms, massive shortfall of production, and people are going hungry.
The numbers in this whole story is what surprises me as well. You know, like 4,000 white farmers were evicted from their farms.
4,000, yeah.
How's that just, you know?
Yeah, well, they did it.
It is what it is.
Well,
and now 500,000 people are still just waiting for the hopes that they would get a farm. Like, what are you doing?
And then they get the farm, they sell it for way below market price because there's suddenly a glut of farms on the market, and nobody wants to farm the land. Farming is hard. Yeah. So before you start saying, where's the land? And you've taken my land from someone. What are you going to do with the land? It's like a dog that chases a car. What are you going to do when you catch it?
Yeah.
Because then you have to farm.
Well, that's why they're in the state now where they're being deemed unproductive.
Well, that's why Bob is trying now desperately to find a way to make his country work, and it's not going to happen. Not going to happen.
That's why I always say my ancestors are from some coastal town. Ain't nobody got time. You
just want a holiday house. Yeah.
If they really want to give me my land, then they can give me my land in Zimbabwe coastal estates.
You don't get to choose. You might get some horrible dry square of the Karoo.
My land is not in like nice now.
Your land.
Eastern Cape.
Show me the title deeds. All right, here's Bob, by the way, just quickly. Thought this might amuse you. Listen to this.
This year, we just must have elections. They just must take place.
Hmm.
With or without a new constitution.
You know, the party will find a successor. It's the people who will find a successor. I came from the people. And the people, in their wisdom, are members of the party, will certainly select someone. Once I say, well, I'm now retiring. But not yet.
Not yet.
At this age, I still can go some distance, can't I?
What?
It has always been peaceful, very peaceful. And we... We're very suspicious of each other at the beginning. But as time went on, now we've got to know each other. And now we Tangrag and Gru drink a cup of tea, which I make. And I will have no objection from to drinking a cup of tea with each he makes.
Yes. I don't know who he's talking about there, but he says he can go some distance. It's an old clip, but he still means it. And he still hasn't resigned. He's 93 years old, that guy. Unbelievable.
You know, and Mugabe as well, it's always about, I don't get him sometimes. So he says with the whole land thing, he told Tony Blair to keep his England and he'll keep his Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. But now he's also signed a deal with Chinese investors to create a Disneyland in Africa.
It all depends on who's got the money. If you pay the right person, this is what we've learned about our own presidents here in Africa. If you pay them the right amount, you can do whatever you want. You can be as colonial as you like, just for the right amount of money.
I find it so ironic that the happiest place on earth will now be in Zimbabwe.
All right, let's get into Ben's sport. Ben, what have you for us today?
Right, Gareth, lots of rugby news. Today, the Hurricanes will take on the Lions, the British and Irish Lions. So that'll be the last of the midweek games for the tour. The British and Irish Lions, of course, took a hammering in the first test against the All Blacks. And though they'll probably win today against the Hurricanes, the big question is who of these midweek players will get a chance in the main Saturday side? Be a quick turnaround because they'll play again on Saturday. So if they do kind of shine today, after shining last week in their big win against the Chiefs, big selection poses for Warren Gatland. The Boks are now the fifth best team in the world, according to the rankings. They are behind New Zealand, England, Ireland, and Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But Rusty Erasmus looks set to return to South Africa now to become the director of SA Rugby.
What does that mean?
Director of SA, like Bok Rugby, essentially. It means that he would then have guys like Alistair Kassir report to him.
Oh, okay.
He would be the head honcho, the controlling figure.
He's the layer of management above them.
Exactly. He'd be the one who'd be really steering the ship, so to speak, and making sure that guys like Alistair Kassir have the freedom to do what they want. They have the right plan in place. And his mandate, pretty simply, is to get the Boks to be back at the top of the world where they once were.
Right.
2009, I think the last time we could essentially say the Boks were there, they were looking really great. They had a great side, of course, being 2007 world champions. And from there, well, things have gone slippery slopish, really. Down, down, down. But this current Springbok team has given everyone the chance to believe again. And if Rossi comes back from Ireland, which is expected to happen, some people are saying it's a done deal already, then, you know, we could get all the right sort of role players back in the right places, which is very, very cool. Warren Whiteley will be out for 3 weeks. That troublesome groin of his has really played up, and he now has to simply rest it. Of course, he is the Bok captain, so he was pushing through the pain barrier there so he can make sure he could play in the French internationals. But, nope, 3 weeks out. So that means the Lions' campaign to be the top team in Super Rugby is taking a bit of a knock. But we'll get into that tomorrow with all the rest of Super Rugby fixtures, because Super Rugby is back in football. From tomorrow, we'll see the Confed Cup semi-finals. So Portugal versus Peru and Mexico versus Germany. But the big news from yesterday was the Proteas. They announced their test squad.
Yes.
So the Proteas have had a bit of a shit time of things in England. They lost the ODI series in England prior to the Champions Trophy. They choked the crap out of it in the Champions Trophy itself. And then, well, this latest T20 series, you know, you call it what you want. Some people say it's just a bunch of friendlies. Some people say it's slaught in the Proteas colors, therefore it's important. Well, they lost that too. So, hopes are medium at best, you could say. FWC will be the captain of the test squad, but he is currently waiting the birth of his new child, so he's in doubt for the first test. First test will be at Lord's, July the 6th. The rest of the squad looks pretty settled with a few new names coming in. Hashim Amin, of course, is there. Temba Bavuma. Tinus de Brain, he was in New Zealand recently. Well, he's been part of the mix the last sort of year. Quinton de Kock, JP Duminy, Dean Algar, and then Heino Kun comes in. Now, Heino has been a stalwart of SA cricket for quite some time. He has played some T20 internationals for the Proteas, but on just amazing first-class form and form for the SAA team. This is the SAA team that got absolutely dicked every time they played. Mm-hmm. He was still scoring centuries. He was a standout player. So at the age of 32, he gets his well-deserved chance of a debut there.
Great.
Keshav Maharaj will be the only spinner in the team. Then Adam Markram, who is this outstanding young opening batsman. I mean, this guy is just going to be incredible. Everyone's saying as such. He is there as cover for Faf du Plessis. Morten Immortals in the team, as is Chris Morris, Dwayne Ulafia. Andile Petlokwayo comes in as well. Bit of a surprise choice. Everyone thought he was more of a white ball player only. But he'll be there. And then Verdun Philander and Kakisa Rabada. That is your team. The tests will take place as such. First test, July 6th at Lord's. Then it'll be second test at Trent Bridge in Nottingham, July 14th. Then the third test will be at the Oval, July 27th. And the fourth test will be the final one, Old Trafford at Manchester. There's the cricket ground, of course, here, not the football stadium. August the 4th.
Need to be clear about these things with Sia.
Four test matches. This is the real thing. And people are saying, well, you know, the Proteas, who cares about limited over stuff? It's all about test matches. It's a great theory, provided they can win. The golf circle thing's going very, very exciting towards the European swing right now. So we've had some great golf in America, but now it's all roads leading to Birkdale. Now, Birkdale is where the 146th Open Championship will take place. So going into that, we've got the Open de France that'll take place this weekend. And then we've got Rory McIlroy's tournament, the Irish Open. Then it'll be the Scottish Open. and then it'll be the Open Championship itself. So an amazing month. There's some great Lynx golf thrown in there, which I don't see a whole bunch of, but we wish we could see more of. And this third major of the year, well, it is going to be bloody exciting, considering the fact that I think the last nine majors have now been won by first-timers. Yeah.
It's a new crop.
Pretty much, Gareth. Yeah, that's kind of it for sport. You know, it's a Tuesday. Let's not get too excited. Wimbledon starting soon. There's a lot of qualifiers going on at the moment with names you don't really care for. And, of course, Super Rugby gets started. Tour de France is back soon. But yeah, more sport tomorrow.
All right, that's Ben with the sport. Let's turn our attention now to Anthea, who is on the line. She's going to give us the latest in the finance. And wouldn't be Anthea without a little bit of Anthea's theme song. So here we are, everybody, just to wake you up nicely this morning. See what's high for the money. Okay, Anthea, so where do we begin? Shall we look at JSE yesterday?
Good morning, Gareth. Yes, the JSE was a bit disappointing again yesterday. We were down about 0.5%.
Yeah.
The Rand particularly strong again, 12.84 to the US dollar. It's kind of inexplicable, actually. So, of course, the stronger Rand having a negative impact on our Rand hedge shares, even Naspers, despite their great results the other day, was down about... What was that, sorry?
Yeah, they took a little tumble.
They did, yes. And I think it really is just the stronger Rand. But at least the banks had a good day on the back of the stronger Rand. So financials slightly higher. Resources down over 1%. I mean, I know gold and platinum fell, but it's quite a big move down considering where we are trading at the moment.
Right.
I think most of the big news at the moment is really in global markets. And it's a shame we couldn't follow global markets yesterday because Europe, UK, Asia were all higher.
Yes.
A couple of things driving the market there. First of all, oil has finally halted its free fall. So that helped the energy shares recover a bit of ground. And then financial shares were higher in Europe on the back of news that Italy had committed another 17 billion euros to bail out two more banks, Veneto Banca and Banca Popolare di Vicenza. So, I mean, this is just, barely a month after they bailed out Banca Monte dei Paschi. I think it's slightly different this time, though, because they've got Intesa San Paolo taking over Veneto Banca's good assets, and then obviously the government will take on the bad assets. I mean, it really is, let's be honest, at the end of the day, just government money or taxpayers' money that's being used to prop up these banks, but at least they're not allowing their banking system to fail.
Right. No, I'm with you. And obviously this is just also, it's the way that we behave now. When a bank fails, then they bail them out.
Yes, I'm not sure it's the perfect solution, but I do know that the one thing you don't want is for banks to fail. I mean, it just causes such systemic risk.
Yeah. No, I understand. It's not great because we want businesses to survive on their own merits, right? But I suppose you can't just let them fail because then a whole lot of other people's hard-earned savings and all kinds of other money gets thrown down the toilet as well.
That's exactly right. And then the system just collapses because people who were banking there lose confidence. The banking system really is built on confidence. That's all it is.
Right.
And then in addition, we also had food and beverage stocks in Europe higher yesterday. There's a story that Nestle is, I want to say under attack, but it's not really. It's the other way around. Oh, excuse me.
Oh, hello.
A hedge fund company called Third Point now owns $3.5 billion worth of Nestle shares, which is only about 1%, just over 1% of the company. But it does make them a top 10 holder, and they also have a seat on the board. And it looks like the fund manager, a guy called Daniel Loeb, is looking to catalyze corporate action. So I think his first order of business, he said, was to try and get Nestle to sell off their 25% stake in L'Oreal, which is worth about $25 billion, and then to commit to a share buyback. All he's trying to do, I think, is to extract value out of the companies and to say that if you want to be invested in Nestle, then here's the vehicle, Nestle shares. And if you want to be invested in L'Oreal, then this is a different market. And also, I mean, $25 billion for a company like Nestle to do a share buyback really is going to prop up their shares. So that could be quite nice.
Okay.
So lots going on kind of globally. I mean, what did happen yesterday afternoon was that suddenly we were all fine all day long, kind of all global markets higher and all very exciting. Even the U.S. opened higher. But then in the afternoon, suddenly, just before our market closed, we took a big dip. And I think it's on news that the U.S. approved the extension of Donald Trump's travel ban, which was the catalyst. Yes. I mean, I can't see anything else driving the markets lower.
I think you might be onto something there, because that's kind of something that business would like. It shows that the president has executive authority. There is certainty. What he says will happen happens, that kind of thing, right?
There you go. Yeah. So we've kind of. Oh, excuse me.
Good heavens, Anthea! What's going on with you today?
Sorry, Gareth. We've almost discounted him and his strange policies, but it looks like, you know, if he keeps at it, he might get a few things through.
Right. Okay. Are there any other stocks and shares that have caught your eye in the last couple of days?
Yes, there are actually. So, just two more shares. First of all, Carp Agri, which is a subsidiary of Zeda, listed yesterday on the main board of the JSE. It's called a specialty retailer. It's really just an agricultural play. Listed at about 58.60 and traded all the way up to 64 Rand per share. I mean, it's a company valued at about 4 billion Rand, so not huge, big enough, but not absolutely huge. Very much agricultural services product. It started in 1912. It's an old company. Mm-hmm. And they've got three main divisions: AgriMark, PacMark, and the Fuel Company, which generates between those three about 80% of the company's revenue. So that's an interesting one to watch. I don't think we're out of the woods just yet on the agricultural side. And you see there was another case of bird flu yesterday.
Yeah.
We were talking about it for Astral, mm-hmm. In Villiersdorp, this time in Standerton, and there's quite a bit of drama around that all of a sudden. I thought it was very much an isolated case in one of the Astral Foods farms, but looks like it's wider spread, so they're trying to contain that. Mm. And then also a company called Exxaro, a mining company, I'm sure you know, they unwound the existing BE transaction, and they're replacing it. So the new deal includes the IDC, which it hadn't before. They haven't given us all the details, because a couple of things. They haven't agreed on third-party funding, and they haven't given us a reference price for the repurchase. But what it does mean is that Exxaro will actually be 30% black-owned as per the recommendation of the recent mining charter. You know, how it really all plays out economically is probably the question. We can't tell you that until we know the reference prices. So Exxaro are going into what we call their close period before they report.
Okay.
And they kind of did this pre-close briefing session, if you like. And there's a couple of things I like about it. You know, they've got this low level of commodity price risk, which really is good for the company. And also they've got the deal with Eskom where they're selling coal at a higher price. And they're planning to spend more on CapEx over the next 3 years because they've diluted their stake in a company called Tronox. And the money they've got from the sale of the Tronox deal, they will use for CapEx. So it all looks very good and very exciting, difficult to quantify at this stage, and even more difficult to question management around it because they're going into a closed period. So I think maybe wait and see for more information when they come out of their closed period and give us their full year results presentation, which will be in a couple of weeks, I think.
Tell me, would this Exxaro thing, just to go back to that for a moment, do you think this is an opportunity?
It might be, yes. I think so.
Mm-hmm. Not much more said than that, Anthea. I can read between the lines. Okay. All right, I got you.
Some things I can't tell you everything on radio. So, Gareth, you have to understand that I have to sometimes make decisions away from you.
You don't have to tell me everything. I accept.
When the time's right, I promise.
Okay, I got you. I'm just reading between the lines. All right, what else do we need to know this morning?
Oh, that's pretty much it. I think there's not a lot going on. I mean, I see the Reserve Bank has put out their quarterly report, and somebody told me that they'd made a profit of 1.4 billion rand, and I haven't had a chance to read the report yet. But the first thing I thought was, oh, yes, of course, and that's why somebody would want to get their hands on that business, right? Yeah. It's not a bad profit considering, like, SAA and all the other state-owned enterprises are making huge losses.
Well, tell
me.
But
now I'm just being, what's the word I'm looking for?
Direct. Listen, what do you make of that whole public protectors Reserve Bank discussion? Purely now with the week's hindsight, what do we think of that?
No, I think it's the worst thing that could happen to South Africa, Gareth. I honestly think that it is the last bastion for complete and utter state capture. So they've already got keys to the Treasury. I no longer have any doubt about it. So you know how in the beginning when Melusi Gigaba was appointed finance minister, we were like, oh, maybe we should give him a chance. But actually now I'm absolutely 100% convinced that they're trying to capture or have captured Treasury. If we now give them keys to the Reserve Bank, that's it. It's game over. It genuinely is the end of the road.
Wow.
South Africa, there's no doubt. The only thing they want it for is to print money, to put excess money into the system so that they can pay for, well, all sorts of things, including state-owned enterprises, shoe those up without raising money from offshore.
Gotcha.
And what that does is cause hyperinflation, like you saw in Zimbabwe, what, not so long ago, 10, 8 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And then your rand becomes worth absolutely nothing and you're stuck here.
God.
And every day, because you're printing more money, because there's more hyperinflation, it becomes more expensive to feed your population or to grow your economy. If they capture the Reserve Bank, it really is the end of the road.
Wow. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks.
Anthea Gardner with a look at the money and some much bigger things than that even. Not the immediate money, but what it could be if things get better or worse. So stick to that and you will know everything you need to know about the economy.
That's about as flustered as you'll ever hear Anthea.
Yeah, and she's usually
this is a very serious thing.
Yeah, she's usually very chilled. So there, just in case. Good morning, everybody. It is Tuesday. It's just after 7 o'clock, cliffcentral.com. Good morning. Let's go. Let's get your day going, shall we? No slackers today. Come and roll that in my direction. Cliffcentral.com.